An illegal immigrant TikTok influencer shares a tutorial on how to invade and occupy homes in America. Juvenile thugs under the age of 13 robbed a Houston bank, and Nashville Metro Police Department seemingly lowered the physical standards in order to recruit more female officers. I will crown my losers of the week, and they are a doozy. Then, speaking of teenage thugs, the white high schooler whose head was beaten into the concrete by a black classmate has still not regained consciousness. Missouri AG Andrew Bailey says the school's DEI policy bears some responsibility for the savage attack, and he joins me later. It all starts now. Well, since Joe Biden was vote-by-mailed into the White House, the American people have been hung out to dry. But when it comes to his precious illegal aliens who have no right to be here, well, they are living large on our dime. Not only have they directly been given flights, hotel rooms, food, and entitlements, they've also become so comfortable with their grift, they brag about it on social media. My first loser this week is an illegal immigrant TikTok influencer, which embarrassingly enough is a real thing now. Well, he posted this tutorial on how his fellow illegal immigrants can take advantage of squatters' rights to invade and inhabit American homes.
My people, I have thought about invading a house in the United States because I learned there's a law that says if a house is not inhabited, we can expropriate it. I think that will be my next business. Invade abandoned houses.
Oh, goody. Well, as an American citizen, you may not be able to afford to buy a home, but just know the 10 million plus illegals Biden has let in will not lose a wink of sleep as they steal, plunder, and pillage what you have worked for. But speaking of pillaging and plundering, if you need further proof parents in America have failed their children, well, look no further than this. Three juveniles, ages 11, 12, and 16, were arrested this week in connection with a bank robbery in Houston. The robbery took place in broad daylight. The FBI says the boys threatened the bank teller before leaving the bank with an undisclosed amount of cash. The youth of America are lost. Parents have failed them. The consequenceless system we've created and allowed has failed them. And I really shudder to think what's going to happen 5 to 10 years from now when America's juvenile degenerates reach adulthood. Which sadly brings me to loser three this week, and this one hits home, given I live in Nashville. Now, I usually refrain from criticizing police departments, given the stress and BS they must endure from society on a daily basis, but I just couldn't let this one go. I'm not sure if Nashville Metro PD put these standards in place or if this is another product of DEI, but nevertheless, here it is. In an effort to retain more female officers, Nashville Metro Police Department has released new lower physical standards for officers, and let's just say even Joe Biden could probably make the cut.
For this test, you're to run up to the fence, scale the fence, and continue running to the finish line. This test simulates a short distance foot pursuit that could occur in a parking lot. This test requires you to make frequent changes of directions while running as fast as possible. You will have to step over several obstacles and clear a small obstacle while continue running.
I mean, I'm all for female officers, but to lower the standard and the bar quite literally just to get more on the force is a reckless, woke joke, and I'm honestly embarrassed for Nashville. But those are my losers of the week. God bless. Moving on now to a story that needs to stay in the headlines and top of mind, the savage beating of a young high school girl outside of Hazelwood High School in St. Louis. 16-year-old Kaylee Gain was brutally beaten into the concrete by a fellow classmate as onlookers recorded and didn't appear to give a damn. After her head was repeatedly smashed into the concrete, she appeared to suffer a seizure, again, all while degenerates stood by and watched. Kaylee Gain is still fighting for her life and still has not regained consciousness. I personally hope the girl who did this to her will face attempted murder charges and be tried as an adult. I think she's irredeemable and doesn't deserve grace or mercy for her act. But besides her culpability in all of this, could the high school itself be held partially responsible? Did their DEI policy lead to this horrific incident? Well, my next guest says maybe so, and he joins me now, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Attorney General Bailey, thank you so much for being with me. I have a lot to discuss with you. It's been a big couple of weeks for Missouri, to say the least.
Yeah, that's right. You know, at the end of the day, thoughts and prayers go out to the victim of this heinous assault and her family as she still struggles with her life at a hospital here in St. Louis. And you're right. I mean, look, this is a 15-year-old attacker who repeatedly bludgeoned the victim's head into the hard concrete, even after the attacker had rendered the victim incapable of resisting and fighting back. The attacker did not disengage, continued to press the attack and bludgeon the victim's head against the pavement. And, you know, this is a first degree assault at a minimum. She intended to inflict serious physical injury and obtained that result. And when you've got a teen of that age that commits an adult crime, there need to be adult consequences.
I also think that it sends a message to, you know, I think adolescents around the country that they cannot do this kind of thing and that there are harsh consequences. It's not a slap on the wrist. It's not give this person mercy and grace, explain away their behavior with some kind of a narrative. It's there's going to be consequences, lifelong consequences, if you do something like this. And I still can't wrap my head around what would make a 15-year-old girl so angry and so violent that she could do something like that to a fellow human being. I don't care what they were arguing over. I mean, the brutality that we saw in that video, in my opinion, is horrific, to say the least. Have you spoken at all to the family of Kaylee Gain? Do you know any more about her situation or what she might be facing?
Well, we know that they're still at the hospital, you know, dealing with the trauma and dealing with their daughter, who is in really critical condition and has not regained consciousness as of the last report. But let me say this, too. You know, a couple of points that I think need to be made here, and I think you're absolutely right. First and foremost, the juvenile justice system in Missouri is intended to serve the best interests of the child. And so when you have juveniles that are committing violent acts or committing crimes, the juvenile system is supposed to either treat them, rehabilitate them, or get some kind of intervention in their life to prevent that criminal behavior from escalating. But you reach a certain age and a certain level of violence when you're right, there are no further resources that can be used to rectify the behavior. And so when you have that kind of system failure, the juvenile absolutely needs to go to adult court and face adult consequences. And in this instance, Section 211071 of the code here in Missouri requires, there is no discretion, but requires the juvenile officer to hold a certification hearing to determine whether or not this child should be tried as an adult. And let me say this too, it's important to remember, this fight occurred at 2:30 p.m. in broad daylight on a school day, on a Friday, mere meters from where the school exists, where these teens are students. And there are multiple teens involved in the fight. So where was the juvenile office prior to this? Where was the school prior to this? Why weren't interventions put in place to prevent this kind of conflict from resulting in an escalation in violence that now you have someone whose life is on the line? And so that's a system failure in and of itself. The juvenile officers also have jurisdiction where there are teens or youth of any age who are beyond parental control or who are just demonstrating behavior injurious to themselves or their community. So intervention should have been in place to prevent this. And that's where the school comes in. And there's some serious concerns about how the school is operating and its lack of concern for the safety of the students. And certainly these teens are a prime example of what happens when they ignore the safety of the students in their charge.
Let's talk about some of that, getting into the school and the responsibility that they might have in all of this. You know, I saw in a piece, of course, at FoxNews.com that you had mentioned that the school has a DEI push, for those that are unfamiliar with that term, diversity, equity, inclusion policy, that may have contributed to this by driving resource officers off that campus or not allowing them to perform in the full capacity of what they should have been doing. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what the problem is as it relates to DEI?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the school has an enormous amount of culpability in this fight and bears some responsibility. Look at the statement they put out after the fight was reported on. Basically, they say, hey, look, this is a community issue. The community needs to heal. No concern for the victim. No moral clarity on who the attacker was. And like the fact that there was a criminal act committed by a wrongdoer and a victim who's now struggling for their life. But you're right. Look, in August of 2021, this school promoted a radical, racially divisive DEI program and required that the school resource officers, who are uniformed police officers assigned to monitor the hallways and the parking lots and to be present in the school as a resource to the school to ensure safety in the schools and in large part be an early warning system to detect these kinds of escalations and violence before they get to the level of a serious assault. But in 2021, the school resource officers, the law enforcement agency, said we're not going to participate in the school's radically progressive, racially divisive DEI programming. And so the schools booted the school resource officers off the campus, got rid of the uniformed police officers who otherwise would have been there to be an early warning system to detect this kind of conflict amongst this many teens and prevent it from escalating to this level. And so the school clearly has a history of promoting DEI over the safety of its students. And one wonders, when you're using this kind of racially divisive indoctrination programming, what role did that play in motivating this violent attack?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the mainstream media at large really didn't pick this up. Of course, it was a lot of discussion about it on social media with several accounts putting out the video. Of course, some discussions online about it. But the mainstream media at large really didn't elevate this story. And one has to wonder, if the races were reversed and a white girl was beating a black girl's head into the concrete, would there have been national outcry and outrage? I believe so, after we saw in the summer of 2020. So it seems like a lot of this is swept under the rug, these violent acts being done, basically not covered or covered to the extent of how race can be used and exploited. That's another part of all this that I think is so disgusting. But, you know, just in discussing this, you have a great state, a wonderful state, but there's been a lot of discussion lately, especially in regards to St. Louis and the increasing amount of violence and how it's becoming a more dangerous place. You know, what can you say to that? And what can your state do to get back on track and to regain some semblance of law and order?
Well, first and foremost, at the Attorney General's office, we've taken enormous steps. We've increased criminal prosecution by 133% in just the 1 year I've been in office. We also filed the landmark litigation to remove the Soros-backed prosecutor in the city of St. Louis who was refusing to enforce the law, and victims were suffering. She had a 96% non-prosecution rate. That means 96% of the crimes reported she wouldn't take any action on. Of the 4% of cases she filed, there was a 37% dismissal rate because she would never show up for court. So this had reached a really critical condition. It undermined the entire criminal justice system of the state of Missouri, and I'm proud that we took bold action. We're ultimately successful in removing her. But look, no one should be surprised that teens of this age growing up in the St. Louis region live in a culture of violence when for years they've looked on as the Soros-backed prosecutor refused to do anything about crime in the city, despite the fact that she was elected to do that job and swore an oath to uphold the law. You know, these youth live in a district, a congressional district, where Congresswoman Cori Bush has publicly called for the defunding of police and the elimination of any kind of law and order. So, you know, of course they live in an environment where they think there are no consequences. And that's why you have the kind of disastrous results like you see in this video. And we've got to continue to hold wrongdoers accountable. We've got to engage the criminal justice system, and specifically the juvenile justice system. We've got to stomp out these racially divisive DEI programs. We also have authority at the Attorney General's office to enforce the provisions of the Missouri Human Rights Act. Racism is illegal under the law. It's unconstitutional, and we will use every means at our disposal to root it out and put an end to it to prevent this kind of disastrous result from happening in the future.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You got a long road ahead of you, but it's great to know that there are patriots out there battling. You know, speaking of patriots out there battling, I got to talk to you about the oral arguments that the Supreme Court is currently hearing on the censorship case. Near and dear to my heart, given I was, you know, personally targeted by the Biden administration and one Rob Flaherty for reduction on Facebook due to my opinions on COVID and the vaccine. I got to get your take on how you think this is going to go. I mean, early on this week, we're hearing Justice Brown Jackson talk about how she doesn't want the First Amendment to hamstring the government. I mean, it's not looking good, and I'm a little fearful of how this one's going to shake out. What are your thoughts?
Well, certainly the legacy media would portray it as a crisis. And I'll tell you that these are the worst First Amendment violations in this nation's history. And you were targeted for censorship specifically by the Biden White House. And the censorship regime grew very quickly. And in those emails from Rob Flaherty and the White House Communications Department, they said that the demands for censorship were coming from the very highest levels of the White House. Well, that clearly means President Joe Biden himself was trying to remove your posts from social media. So you should take a lot of pride in that. They can't beat you on the arguments, so they have to silence you. And we're not going to let that happen. Our First Amendment will not tolerate government censorship. We live in a society where the First Amendment protects a free, fair, and open marketplace of ideas, and the people will determine what is and isn't true based on that healthy debate. The remedy for disfavored speech in this nation has always been counter speech, not government censorship. But look, this has never been about truth. It's always been about power. The Constitution exists to protect us from the government. The government exists to protect our rights. And that's why this lawsuit's so important, regardless of what Associate Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson may misunderstand about the role of the Constitution in our democratic republic.
If there's anything that needs to be hamstringed, it is the government. And the fact that the Biden White House so desperately wants to hold on to their power to censor Americans is really troubling. I have a feeling that things would not be the same if President Trump was in the Oval Office and he wanted to censor liberal speech. I'd have a feeling there would be an outcry. But the double standard, of course, is the only standard that certain folks on the left operate on. Thank you for everything that you're doing in Missouri. Thank you for updating us on everything going on and for fighting the good fight there. We really appreciate your time and keep fighting because your state is certainly worth it.
Hey, God bless you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Come back anytime. That does it for this week of Tommy Lahren is Fearless. Please catch me on Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern for the big weekend show, of course, on Fox News. But until then, from Nashville, God bless and take care.